Hey, what's going on? This is Austin. Just wanted to touch base and kind of give this little preface this episode. This is kind of unlike the normal format of things we do here on the SOD podcast. So I wanted to again thank Leon and tell him how much I appreciate and love him. And thank you for everything that you are doing and that you have done. And I really wanted to kind of give a different perspective, and I wanted to give an exclusive content of what happened from Leon's perspective. And as you'll see in the episode, I expressed and asked him to please speak about it like you've never spoken about it before. And I'll admit, it definitely got a little emotional. I got emotional. I can admit that, because just the love and the respect I have for him, and for him to just to go through what he was going through and went through. So sit back, please listen. Please take in consideration what is going on and what has been going on to us here in this world. Brother Leon is one of the very few, if only, survivors at a point in time in our culture where black men engaging with the police officer and getting shot are not surviving. And Leon survived and is surviving and thriving. So I really wanted to have him come and really share that and see that, and for everyone to hear his testimony. So please sit back and enjoy. And single, obsolete, and dangerous. The dangerous part is not the people, it's the conversation. So, peace. All right. My man, listen, I just wanted to let y'all know, man. Can I say this is an exclusive? Is this your first podcast? Or you done a podcast before?
So I've spoken right on stages, and they turned it into podcasts, but I've never sat down with someone who said, "Yo, this is a podcast."
Dope. So this is an exclusive. So I want to first say that I love you beyond anything. And the relationships that you and I had and forged, and we forged it like real men in the dojo, right? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Sure. So to also express and say thank you, man. I appreciate you. So
I love you too, bro.
Yeah. Sure. So for everyone to understand, we have Leon Ford, who is a venture capitalist. I like venture capitalists. So his title, he's a venture capitalist. And Leon Ford is here with an exclusive with the Single, Obsolete, and Dangerous podcast, a podcast where black folk and white people can come together and talk about white supremacy, racism, and white people themselves, but in a constructive manner, you know? So, again, please, bro, you just flow, and thank you again for coming here and just kind of building with me about this, man.
For sure. That's what we do on a regular.
Yeah, right? We do that. Right? Yeah. That's something, you know, a couple of people that do wind up doing some interviews, like, man, we do this all the time. So now we're going recording and stuff. But where you're going and how you're moving, I'm just so glad that I got a chance to get with you beforehand, man, because then it's going to be like, oh, man, I done emailed you 20 times, and now you don't live in the, you don't even live in that. You ain't here no more, so,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm glad I got a chance to.
You know what, bro? I'm very intentional about not becoming that. Yeah.
It's, what do you mean? What do you mean by that? Or not becoming what exactly? What do you mean by what I'm saying? That new money smell.
Yeah, the new money, you know what I mean? Like, there are people, like, I definitely have to make myself a little less accessible, but there are people within my network that I've met along the years that I'm always going to be accessible to.
True.
You know what I mean? Like, there's, you know, there's some people who just come with that drama, right? They need somebody to save them, and they really don't want to save themselves. They're stuck in that rat race, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's those people who, you know, no matter how big I get in the eyes of society or the world, there are people who still keep me humble, who still add value to my life.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So wow. I'm very intentional about, you know, not becoming, you know, what society wants me to be.
Wow.
You know, financially or, mm-hmm. you know, just, you know, that you know, looking at people like they're untouchable because I have money now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I've been very intentional about not, you know, working with specific organizations. These mm-hmm. are the people who turned their back on me, you know, when I was fighting for my freedom. Mm-hmm. And I've been very intentional about working with young people. You know what I mean? And so I'm in the schools every week here in Pittsburgh. Like, that's I travel right. a lot, but when I'm home, I make sure I go into the schools. I spend a lot of time at U Prep over there on the hill. Mm-hmm. That's one of the schools that are like, it's like untouchable. Like, nobody wants to go to U Prep. You know what I mean? All the media surrounding the school is negative, but we're doing some great things inside that school, and the students are brilliant.
Indeed.
You know what I mean? So,
Matt, just to even corroborate that, I was coming out of, when I saw you, I was coming out of doing a tutoring session in Homewood, helping some kids out in an after-school program. And as I'm coming out, you're in the whip, and then you got a young soldier, you got a young man in the passenger side. So, yes, yeah, man, that is the truest and realest. You had touch base. I also wanted to give that experience that happened. You talked about when you pulled up, and the guy that pulled up with
the car wash.
Yeah, the car wash situation. Yeah. Yes, share that real quick.
Yes. And so, so up until that point, I was not intentional about just being in certain spaces.
Mm.
Right.
Wow.
But that experience just changed my perspective of who I am and who I have to be.
Hmm.
And so, you know, about a week and a half ago, I went to the car wash.
Right.
And it was me and my cousin, and, you know, we're just chilling out. This brother came, you know, successful. He had a nice Benz, and he hopped out the Benz, and he was just, like, full of ego. Like, I felt it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was telling the young brothers who was washing his car, like, yo, make sure y'all do this like this or I'm going to come back, and it's going to be problems. And they're just looking at him like they could tell he got money, right?
Yeah.
And he's trying to engage in a conversation with me when he seen me. He was like, oh, Brother Ford, I see you on the news, whoop-de-woo, I support you, you know, and I'm like, all right, you know, I appreciate it. Yeah. But I ain't really, you know what I mean, I don't like all that.
Yeah, don't have that with that extra rah-rah.
Yeah,
come on,
you know,
man.
I'm just chilling, you know. Yeah. And so the brother, he's trying to engage in a conversation. He's like, yo, man, you need to get with Tim Stevens and them, and whoop-de-woo. And I'm like, no, I'm good off that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm good off that, bro.
Uh-huh.
And he's just trying to, like, oh, man, they good folks. I'm like, well, it depends on who your perspective of who they are. You know what I mean? And so he just kept trying to engage in the conversation. Then he goes and says, yeah, I'm gonna go ahead. I might go ahead and grab a Bentley and this, that, and the third. And
yeah.
I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know that I'm gonna engage in a conversation. I told him, I said, I don't even have a car, brother. Like, you know what I mean? I'm bumming my dad's car right now. You know what I mean? And it's intentional, right? And so he's like, oh, all right. Like, you know, he's like, man, well, just keep doing what you're doing, man. And make sure you stay away from niggas.
Wait. He said, make sure you stay away from niggas.
Yeah. He's like, they always want some.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, bruh, ain't nobody asking me for nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
wow.
I'm in the community, and, you know, I'm here. Like, this is where I'm at. Like, I'm giving my time, and that perspective, it just showed me how certain people within the black middle class view me.
Wow.
Before my circumstances changed.
You know what? You know what's funny, man? Because of that stigma and getting money, no one has really come at you because of it, right?
Right.
And this is kind of going to segue into a little piece, and then we're just going to be flowing. But do you think because
everyone knows that the money you got was based upon a settlement of your injustice, that they don't come, they don't, they initially are like, you know what, I'm not going to try to come at him because of that. Had it been the lottery, or had it been a rap deal because you was in, you know what I mean?
Right.
People would have been like, come on, man, you got a ticket, you know, you need more. Do you think that that's what has kind of curtailed?
Nah, I really think it's the respect factor.
Before the money even got there.
Gotta figure, I was always like popular in the neighborhood.
True indeed.
Right? I always had nice things. Mm. And I've given this city my heart, my soul, my blood, my sweat, my tears.
Literally.
Over the past, you know, few years, several years. And so, you know, some of the people, I mean, I either mentored their daughter, their son, their nephew, their grand, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like,
okay.
I've, you know, counseled adults, you know, who may have been on drugs. I've, you know, just had positive, empowering conversations with people within the community where I'm connecting them to resources and saying like, all right, I can't help you with that, but I know somebody who can, right? Mm-hmm. And so I've just become this figure of love within the community.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm talking about squash and real beef. I'm talking about, you know what I mean? Like having two people in my car, like who shot each other, you know what I'm saying? At the same time. And I'm like, yo, bro, y'all got to chill. And off the strength of me, they chill. You know what I'm saying? Or even, you know, one of my close friends had killed someone when he was about 15. And, you know, and the person that he killed was my mentor's brother.
What?
Right?
Okay.
Me and my mentor just went to go visit him in prison. And now my mentor has been visiting him by himself to, you know.
And he's going, so, you said that quick, so wait. So the mentor that you had, his little brother was shot and killed by your friend.
By my friend.
And that friend went to jail. And when you became, and that, were you a mentor with that, was he your mentor when that happened?
He wasn't.
So the situation of his brother getting killed by your friend had happened, and then you later became, you got with this guy, he became your mentor, and through your interaction, you figured out that his little brother had got shot by your friend.
Exactly.
Did you immediately tell him when he told you?
So I kind of figured out that was his brother after the fact.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people within the community who are navigating spaces but never saying anything, right? And I, as a man with principles, I didn't feel comfortable navigating those spaces without
saying, like, look,
saying.
This is and my so, homie. This was my homie who killed your little brother. How long between you realized what it was to when you was like, yo, the dude that killed your brother was my homie?
It may have been about a year or so.
Wow.
Right.
So you were wrestling with that every day for a year?
Every day. Every day.
Wow.
And the thing that opened up the door for it was that we were at a meeting, a gathering, where we were talking about forgiveness and healing. And like something in my spirit told me that something in his spirit was ready for it.
What?
And I had a letter that my boy had wrote me. Uh-huh. And it was just like, you know, just regular stuff. Like, yeah, bro.
Yeah, he sent you a kite. You know, he sent that kite. Like, what's going on?
You know, when my mentor got in the car with me, I just gave it to him. Like, yo, you know, this is my boy. Just sit with it. I don't know. I just need to let you know this.
Wow.
And, you know, he sat with it and, like, it was real emotional. And he was like, yo, I've been praying for God to help me with forgiveness. And I never knew how it was going to happen.
And it was his mentee. It was his the one that he was building with.
Yeah, so he always say, like, he always tell me, I thought I was in your life to help you, but it was the other way around.
He was in his life to
help him. We really strengthen each other and help each other out, man. So it's a real powerful and positive interaction. But it's things like that in a community that don't happen, which gets, like, the ultimate, you know what I mean, respect and love. And I think that is why I didn't have and I don't have, you know, that negative backlash from.
Do you have any survivor remorse? that understanding of, you know, the survivor remorse, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know, they use that a lot of times with black successful athletes, and they're like kind of the dichotomy that they have of their success being coming from places or around people with not, and feeling kind of remorseful that they were able to start. So do you have any, and you have and you're a literal survivor. So yeah. Is there any survival remorse that you have?
No, not at all. But I just feel purpose. Hmm. I don't feel survival remorse. I just feel like I'm walking in my purpose. And the more I embrace the realities of my circumstances, the easier it is for me to walk in my purpose. And so sometimes it can get cloudy.
Right.
Just like last week, man, I went to go test drive a Tesla.
Right, okay. Is that S, the Model S? Model S?
The truck.
Yeah. Oh, okay, with the bat wings.
Yeah, man, it was nice. Like, you know, when I left and I slept on it, you know what I mean? I'm like, man, how does this add value to my purpose? You know what I mean? It's feeding my ego. Am I going to ride around the neighborhood and hit the button, show everybody how the doors go up and get tired of it? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's just not my thing. You know what I mean? So I really have a desire to invest in people. You know what I mean? And to strengthen, you know, community. Like one of the things that I did with my dad, right? He was in the union for years. You know, he had a hard time, you know, because he...
Pittsburgh, man. It's an old school... Man, this is... SOD, man, we talk about white supremacy, even though I'm going to try to weave it in there, but, man, that is a stigma strong, especially in the city of Pittsburgh, about these unions and how it is an extension of the institutionalized racism that is still rocking right now.
Yes.
Like today, like as you and I are talking right
now.
And
so Pittsburgh is very racist.
Man.
It is. Just stand plain.
What they say they call it the Mississippi of the North.
Yeah, man, it may be worse than Mississippi.
Talk about, man, bro.
Because people are so asleep, they don't see it.
Man, it's 1957. It's a perpetual 1957 in the city of Pittsburgh.
People, you know, it's amazing, you know, because traveling and having the opportunity to meet white folks in other cities.
Right. It's completely different.
and you think Pittsburgh is progressive, and you'd be like, it's not progressive here.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So yeah, me and my dad,
right.
We started a trucking company, right? So we're delivering, you know, furniture and appliances for furniture stores, appliance stores, and stuff. Got a big 26-foot box truck, and what felt so good is like talking to one of my boys who was just got out of prison and he was struggling with some things, and being in the position to be like, yo. You got your license? No. All right, we're going to help you get your license. Boom. Got his license. Like, are you going to work for the company? You know what I'm saying? And
you're
getting paid, you know, $5.50 a week. You know what I'm saying? And, like, that feeling. You know what I'm saying? Like,
thank you for that.
I've spoken several hundreds of times to several thousands of people. And I know a lot of people are inspired by my story, but nothing felt as good as providing somebody with a job. Not saying, I know somebody who works at such and such place that can pull you in.
No.
Right? But me,
I signed
having
check.
My company,
I signed sent, check that
like,
you
all right, bet, you in. You know what I'm saying?
Awesome.
And we're going to train you, and you're going to work up until, you know, you get it down packed, and then we're going to get some more trucks, and then you can manage one or two trucks, and then you get paid. Like,
I want to segue into there may be somebody, there's going to be some people who don't even know who's going to listen to this, who may not know your story. So I wanted to see if we can segue into some of that. I don't know if there's parameters. Did you have, you didn't have a non-disclosure or anything with you? You ready to rock?
Yeah, right.
Plug your book. But I want you to really give, and this is the thing. I know you've done your story.
Right.
But I really want you to give it way no one has ever heard you say it. So I'm asking you to please tell me what happened, and I'm asking you to be cognizant of sharing something how you never sheltered before.
Right. So tell my story, man. I was shot 5 times by a police officer during a traffic stop where these officers violated you know, several policies and procedures.
Take me there. So you're driving. What street are you on in the hood? That's where I want you to start.
All right, cool.
Okay, there we go. Thank you.
I was leaving Lowell Street. Well, the corner of Lowell and Shetland. My uncle lived on Shetland.
Bet. What time is it?
It is, I don't remember what time it was.
Is it Sunday the sun evening. Is out? Is the sun out? Or is it dark?
It's dark.
Okay.
Yeah, it's dark. It's a Sunday evening in the fall. Mm-hmm. You know, just got done Sunday dinner at my uncle's crib.
Boom.
Headed to, Sunday dinner at my grandma's house. You know, in Garfield.
Double up.
And, yeah, it's just like, I come from a very family-oriented, you know, environment, right? So I was driving down the one way, the correct way, down right. the one way.
Right.
The officers are coming the wrong way up the one way, which they always do. This is not, like, something that they always do this, basically.
Hmm.
And so when they were driving up, you know what I mean? I got my license, right? I'm not dirty. I know I'm not dirty. Dirty is a word for...
Thank you.
Basically, if you don't have any drugs or weapons on you, you're not dirty. Like, you're clean, right?
Yeah.
You're not doing anything illegal. And so these officers, they're driving slow, you know. I was driving, you know, the speed limit, but I had to slow down.
Because they're coming towards you the wrong way on the one way.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I was looking at them like, what the hell are y'all doing? You know what I mean? Like, and so that moment, I knew that they were going to pull me over.
Did you know because you knew they realized you were looking at them funny or because?
It's just, you
just
know,
feeling it beforehand.
Yeah, I can't how can I explain this to people who have not experienced
Yes, exactly. Because there's tons of people who are going to be listening like, I don't know. The cops come, man. You just comply. No,
yeah,
man. You're feeling it way before they even step out the car.
Yeah, it's like when you're in certain neighborhoods. I ain't even going to say certain neighborhoods. When you are black.
Speak, man. When you're a non-white person.
When you're a non-white person and you make eye contact with a police officer,
right?
There's like a 98% chance that they're gonna what we call spin bin, right? They're mm-hmm. gonna bust a U-turn,
mm-hmm.
make a U-turn, and pull you over.
That's important. I want to sit there for a second. When you make eye contact with a police officer, it automatically triggers. It does. I think that little nuance. No one has ever really been able to articulate that little nuance that we kind of already understand, but we don't articulate. There is something when you do make eye contact with a police officer and you're not white. They almost feel that they're offended by it and they're emboldened by it at the same time, whether they're conscious of it or not.
Right.
You know, I train and teach the police at the police academy.
Exactly.
And I teach defensive tactics, which I'm going to have you come in and speak with them. But there is something about that it does do something to them. It does. So go ahead. So he hits the spin bin.
So I was still driving. I made a left onto Larmer Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I made a left on. And then I made a right onto the Meadow Street Bridge.
Right.
As I was crossing the bridge, I could see in the rear view, these officers are no lights on, no sirens on, just driving fast as hell. And
Are these undercover whips, or these are the official black and whites?
The official whips, bro.
Oh, wow.
And I knew it was, you know, the police officers because the sirens on top.
Mm.
So I'm like, okay, like they're gonna pull me over, right? Just as I thought they would, because this was not the first time that I had got pulled over.
Mm.
And so, boom, as I got on Stanton Avenue,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were right behind me, hit the lights, boom, they pulled me over.
Right.
And so one of the officers got out the car and, you know, he just snatched my license off of me.
So he came to the car, you already had the license holding it out?
Yeah.
So you went and grew your license, had it poking out with the window down?
Yes.
Without him even asking, before he even asked? Beat it to it. Okay.
He just snatched it off.
Like he just snatched it.
Pissed. you know, where are you going? What are you doing? I'm like, dang, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just going to my grandma's crib, you know? And dude was just like, you know, like I kicked his dog or something, you know? He was just mad, rude, and disrespectful. So he went back to his car. Other officer came. You know, I tried to, you know, talk to him because he seemed like he was less angry. You know.
So another did he come on the driver's side or was he on the passenger side?
They
the other
both was on the driver's side.
Okay, so the other one came and stayed on the driver's side. Gotcha.
Yeah, so I was just talking to him about my job where I work. At that time, I was working at a body shop. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I'm telling him about, you know, where I work and what I do. Basically trying to let him know, like, dude, I work just like you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I work.
And his interaction with you was cool. He wasn't...
It was cool.
Was
it
he was, having small talk or was he pro?
He was having small talk, but it was more sarcastic.
Okay.
It was more sarcastic. You know what I mean? Like, nigga, you ain't... Like, if you work at a body shop, why you got this dent on the side of your door? You know what I'm saying? Wow. Like, yeah, it was crazy, man. I ended up showing them pictures. You know.
So tell me out. So even in the interaction, you pull out your phone, you're showing them pictures?
Yeah.
Good. All right. Thank you, bro. Thank you for having this conversation. Go ahead, continue.
Yeah,
continue. You're showing him pictures. The other boy, the other cop is in the back in his car running the license, doing whatever running he needs license. To do. And yeah. You're having the small talk, but he's being sarcastic. Yeah. You're even showing, so you're reaching for your phone.
Exactly.
So as you're reaching, so he see you reaching for the phone. He don't trip that you reach for the phone.
Nah.
So you're showing the phone. You're showing him pictures of you at the job, doing your job
exactly.
thing. Go ahead.
And so when the other officer came back, you know, he started to ask me about Lamont Ford.
Lamont Ford? Yeah. Who's Lamont Ford, bro?
He was another guy from, he's from Homewood. I never met him before that.
Did you know him from the hood?
No relations, no nothing, right? So let me
go ahead.
Before I go into
yeah,
that,
yeah.
My car is registered to me. My license was, you know, valid. My, you know, insurance was valid, everything legit. When they ran my plate, everything came back to me. But they insisted that this can't be him.
This can't be him. Even though you got everything official.
Yeah.
He can't be Leon Ford.
Exactly.
He's got to be this Lamont Ford who we got warrants out for.
They didn't have a warrant for Lamont Ford, bro.
So why did Lamont Ford come up in the conversation?
I have no idea.
So did they even speak about who Lamont Ford was?
Nah.
Even in the trials afterward, did they speak about why did Lamont Ford just come out of the ether?
So they typed in L Ford in the system. Hundreds of names popped up and they just seen Lamont Ford's name. One of the guys had I guess he was supposedly in some type of gang activity in Homewood. And they just said, hey, maybe this is Lamont Ford. He looks like him.
When the systems that's coming up, there's mugshots coming up as well?
Yes.
So now all the L4s look alike.
Right. Look. And then, so they always say they ask me to get out the car. Right?
We're going to get to that.
So he... You know, questioned me about Lamont Ford. Did you ever get shot before? Did you ever? Nah.
So the guy that you were having the conversation with, showing them the pictures, the other one comes back. Now you're talking to both of them.
Exactly.
Got it.
And he says, "Hey, doesn't he look like Lamont Ford?" To the other cop. The other cop said, "He said, go look at the picture in the car." Right. The other cop goes back.
So the one that you were doing the sarcastic thing with, he leaves to go look at the picture.
Yeah. And he comes back. He's like, "Well, no, not really." Right?
So he comes back like, nah.
So it's just...
Okay.
It's just like, I mean, poor police work. From the rip.
Off the rip.
Off the rip.
I'm letting you know now that arresting procedure, even pulling over procedure, they don't even broke about 19 things. I would run down, but that's not here right now, but... Off the rip, indeed.
So,
I'll tell you one thing. Two officers on the same side is not even to be done. traffic stops, if there's going to be more than one, one on one side, one on the other side.
That came up in the trial.
I mean, and I wasn't even in trial. I teach them how to do this properly. Yeah. And right off the rip, they already messed up. Continue.
So, officer asked me, you know, this is like the shortened version,
yeah,
right? Because this was several minutes, right? So the first officer, the rude one, asked me, like, hey, dude, why don't you just come back to the cruiser, look at this picture of Lamont Ford, because he does look like you. And I'm like, no. Well, I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, we on Ford. I'm not Lamont Ford.
Right.
And so that was there. I guess that's when they asked me out the car.
So he didn't ask you out the car. He wanted you to come back to look at
a picture of Lamont Ford in the cruiser.
That's a violation, again, because your ability to see what's in the cruiser, to know what weaponry is in there, what tools is in there, is completely not even allowed.
Man, they
violating right off the rip.
It was poor business. Wild, right?
So he says that's what they're using, saying that we wanted them to get out the car.
Yeah. And so, you know, several more minutes, you know, went past. And
was it a back and forth seven more minutes?
Yes.
Get out the car. Just come check it out. No.
Okay. No. It was after that. Uh-huh. It was more questions about Lamont Ford. Hmm. Right. And then I go, I'm like, yo, well, are y'all going to give me a ticket or what? Like, dude's like, man, fuck you. This, that, and the third. You're talking to a police officer. I'm a cop. I'll do what I want to you, and if you're lying about being Lamont Ford, you're going to regret it. It was crazy. So, at this point, you know what I mean? I'm 19, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm 19. I'm still living with my peoples, you know what I mean? And so, you know, I'm like, yo, I'm nervous. I'm all hell. Like, I'm like, yo, I know they're going to try to beat me up. At this point,
yeah,
because they can't arrest me for nothing, right? And so I knew if I got out the car, they were either going to say that I tried to resist and try to tase me or beat me up or worse, right? I knew that while I was sitting in the car, so I'm like, yo, I'm just going to stay in this car. And like, hopefully another cop that got some sense
is going to come up,
or community. Somebody from the community is going to say what's going on, or my family, something's going to happen that's going to...
That moment that was happening, were you scared or were you just concerned?
No, I was scared, honestly.
So were you like, could you feel like the adrenaline, you feel like the little butterflies in your stomach?
Yeah, and I could feel that energy from them. That they were going to do something. You know what I'm saying? Like, I felt it. It's the same, like, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I've always, you know, sense certain
discernment.
Things.
Discernment.
Yeah, the gift of discernment. Mm-hmm. And so it's like when I knew they were going to pull me over, and then when I knew that, oh, something's about to happen. You know what I mean? And so they opened up my door, and I was not getting out. Like,
so they opened up your door. The door was already unlocked.
Yeah, it was unlocked. Yeah, they opened up the door, and you know, they, you know.
Did you have your seatbelt on?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. So they opened up the door, and instantly grabbed me. So when they grabbed me, I'm like, "Yo, hold up! Like, you know, being slowed down. Like, what are y'all doing? Get off me, you know what I mean?" Mm. And so they started to tug on me. Mm-hmm. And when they did that, you know what I'm saying, out of, you know, fear, I pulled off.
Did you take it out of park and then hit the gas? Or it was never in park the entire time your foot was on the brake the entire time?
No, it was, it had to be in park. I know it was in park. But I don't actually remember
shifting.
Right, I know I had to because I watched the video, but in that moment, I was so scared, right, that it just happened naturally. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
So I know.
Is the shift on the wheel or is on your, or is on your next to your leg?
It was next to my leg.
It's the one that's next. It's yes. the shift next to your leg.
And so I make that clear again. You know what I mean? I can say what happened now because I watched the video several times. And mm-hmm. I know in order for the car to move forward, you have to put it in drive.
When you were watching the video, did you see that shake up, the car shaking up?
Yeah.
Yes, getting out of shift, getting out of park into.
And I seen the lights.
You seen the lights shaking up?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, you can see the lights come on because it's because of the gears shifting,
exactly.
changing. So
exactly.
you are okay.
So again, I can say that now.
Is it? And was that a jerk reaction to shift it into drive, or was it just you knew to shift it in drive?
I can't say I knew.
Okay.
Right.
All right. All right.
I can't say that.
But because of the tug and pull, your hand is already on the side. Brinkink. And
exactly.
the natural, because I can feel it, and you can even feel it when it's in gear, like, man, hit the gas now.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. it was fair. In that moment, I had no idea what was happening. It was all fear. You know what I mean? I never knew the officer jumped in the vehicle. I never even knew there was a third officer that came.
So there's a third. So the two that were standing on the side, there's a third one. Is he on the passenger side?
I never knew he was there, right? Until mm-hmm. when I pulled off, I started getting shot.
Who's shooting?
There was an officer that jumped in a vehicle.
How did he jumped in your side?
On the passenger side.
So he jumped in the front or the back?
The front seat on the passenger side.
So even as you're pulling off, he opens up the door.
Exactly, and jumps right in.
He jumps in. The one that pulls off and starts shooting at you was the one that was tugging at you?
No. So the whole traffic stop, the entire traffic stop, there were two officers.
True indeed.
Okay. Somewhere along the way, another officer came.
And he comes up on the passenger side, stays on the blind side, so you don't even see him.
I've never seen him because I'm over here.
Could he have been, when you were shooting that sarcastic back and forth, he could have creeped up on that side.
Exactly.
And that's probably why he was doing that sarcastic back and forth, so you didn't know that he was on that passenger side.
He came, I know now from the mm-hmm. case, he came about 10 minutes into the traffic stop.
About 7 minutes of the traffic stop, you are shooting the shit back and forth.
Exactly.
With the sarcastic talk.
Exactly.
So the tactic that the police officer is doing that back and forth is causing your attention to be taken.
Right.
So that He does come up to the side. Okay, go ahead.
So he jumped in the car while I was moving, and immediately, within like a half a second, just start firing.
He's the one that's shooting? Is the one that jumped in?
Yes, point blank range. Point blank range. So I'm sitting here. He's in a passenger seat, and he's like literally got the gun.
What hand is he using?
I'm assuming his right hand.
His right hand.
Yeah.
He reaches over and he's shooting point blank range. He's not fully in. He's leaning in.
No, he's fully in.
He's ass on the seat and feet in the front.
If you see the car, mm-hmm. it's an Infiniti. It's
right.
a very small car.
Right, right,
right. If he was not sitting,
he wouldn't have been able to even.
Nah.
So he gets in. Is the door open? According to the video,
the door,
he gets in and shuts the door.
The door closed.
From the momentum of the pull-off.
Door closed. Both doors.
And he starts shooting point blank. Okay, so you peel off. All of a sudden, do you see him before he's shooting? So you don't even.
I don't even know.
All right, now, please. Do you feel the shots?
No.
No.
I hear them.
You hear, oh, that sound compression, so you're hearing the shots before you're even feeling anything.
Hear the shots. I smell it.
What's it smell like?
Smell like fireworks.
Like the cherry bombs or the fire, little sparklers?
Like just the residue from fireworks, right? When you
mm-hmm.
know when it's 4th of July and all the smoke is done and you like...
Yeah, you can smell that.
Yeah.
That's what it smells like.
I smelled that. And so the car crashed into like some steps and almost immediately I was being slammed on the ground, handcuffed.
Time out. So you get shot. How many shots are fired?
Five.
And you're hit how many times?
Five.
How far from the pull off and getting shot does the car crash?
maybe a half a block.
So they run down.
Yes.
They chase the car down. And then they open the door after you then got shot 5 times. Are you shot in center mass? You shot, where are you shot?
Once in my neck, 3 times in my chest, and one through my hip.
So he's moving the gun up and down.
He's just firing.
He's just firing. Which one's the first shot?
I'm not sure.
The other police officers come down, the two, the one that was being ignorant, the one that was having the fake-ass conversation. They're the ones that pull you out?
Yes.
The one that did the firing, did he participate in the arrest procedure?
Well,
after firing?
When I was handcuffed on the ground, I was just face down.
Are you still, you're still conscious? You're
still
up?
I'm conscious.
Do you feel any of the bullets?
So,
or you feel any of the shots?
While I was on the ground, I felt them.
Which one are you feeling first? The neck one, the stomach one, or the hip one?
I can't say I felt the shots. I felt the blood coming out my mouth. I felt the warmness under me. And, you know, the cops were, you know, literally telling me, like, yo, we hope you fucking die. Just screaming it. They were screaming, where's the drugs? Where's the, you know, where's the guns? Where's the money? Yeah, it's crazy. And that was.
Man, forgive me for a second, man. So you are on the ground, 5 shots. You're feeling it. And the handcuffs are on. You're not talking back at them.
I was laying there. I didn't know if I was going to live or die. But I knew I wanted to live.
Him.
And, you know, while I was on the ground, I was, you know, breathing. You know, I learned, like, from being a boxer.
Right.
You learn how to breathe.
Control your breathing.
And that's what I was doing. I was just focused on my breathing.
How long were you on the ground? Were you conscious when the ambulance came?
Yes.
Or how long were you on the ground, cuffed?
It felt like a long time.
I bet.
You know, I mean, this whole ordeal felt like an hour long. You know, but I know it was only about, you know, maybe 22 minutes, 23 minutes.
Mm-hmm. When the ambulance came, did they keep the cuffs on you?
I don't remember. I just remember them, you know, cutting my clothes off, like flipping me over on my back, cutting my clothes off. And I kept, they were asking me, you know, where do I live? What's my phone number? What's my dad's phone number? And I just was saying any phone number that I could remember. And I remember just saying numbers. You know what I mean? I just wanted to keep talking. I didn't want to stop talking.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Did you pass out?
Yes.
On
my way to.
Uh-huh.
However, I remember the bright lights when I got to the hospital.
Yeah.
And, you know, I passed out again.
When you woke up, how long after you woke up had you been out?
I'm not sure. I had no concept of time.
Yeah. When you did wake up, was that when they came and told you the effect?
Yes.
So what happened when you woke up?
When I woke up, I remember, you know, a doctor just, you know.
Was your dad and them there?
No. it was maybe 2 weeks before I got a chance to see my family.
Yeah. 2 weeks. You were in intensive care for how long?
Maybe 3 or 4 weeks.
Wow. So you come to, the doctor comes, and what's the doctor say?
You know, they got good news and they got bad news. Good news is I'm going to survive. Bad news is I won't be able to walk.
And when he told you that, did it hit you, or didn't he really hit you?
No, it didn't hit me.
You were like, all right, whatever, just let me get out of here.
Exactly. Then officers came and they took pictures of me.
The officers came?
Yeah.
The ones that did the arrest or something else? Ones. Yeah.
They took pictures of me and told me that, you know, I was being under arrest. And they told me that. Yeah.
So they came in to let you know that you are under arrest? And they are, and reasons for your arrest were?
I don't remember. I don't know. I was charged with, like, aggravated
assault. What they charge? Aggravated assault.
Escape, reckless, and multiple counts of
right.
Everything, yeah.
And this is after they had already told you that you're not going to walk again.
Exactly.
So the potential of not even walking again, but I might have to go to jail.
Exactly.
After this. What was it like when you first saw your dad?
I saw my mom first. So she had a lawyer, an order from the lawyers to come in. And it was only about 5 minutes.
Yeah. How was that?
It was painful. You know what I mean? I didn't want her to know that I was paralyzed. So I didn't want her to talk to no doctors, no nurses, nobody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I knew that was going to be hard for her.
Wow. And what happened when your dad came through?
You know, I just tried to get him to calm down. My dad is very aggressive.
Indeed.
And, you know.
When he walked in there, did he kept that aggressive, or did you see he kind of?
I saw, you know, how hurt he was.
Yeah.
But I already knew what that meant. You know what I mean? And, I just, you know what I mean? My dad, you know, he did a lot of time in prison.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so I knew that, you know, how bad. And even, like, a lot of my friends, I knew how bad it could have got.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had to, you know, listen to my spirit. And although, like, I wanted revenge, I had to.
What do you mean revenge?
I wanted them to feel how I was feeling.
As far, you wanted the police officers?
Yeah, for sure.
Which one? The one that was shooting or the other ones?
Nah, anyone.
Any of them?
Yeah.
That were there?
Yeah. Nah, any of them.
Just any police officer in general?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm a human being. It's natural to feel that way.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But I had to be very, you know, thoughtful because I knew my influence and I knew, like, you know, how some of my friends would react and different things like that.
Were black cops part of that as well?
No, no black cops.
So specifically white cops?
Yeah, specifically white cops. Okay. I have relationships with black cops. It's funny because I was doing an interview, right?
Uh-huh.
And they were asking me about police officers, right? And I'm like, I don't rock with them, you know? And then I left from doing the interview and outside there were a couple of police officers. Some black ones. And I'm like, yo, what's up? And they're like hugging me and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, I thought you said, you know, you don't like police. I'm like, yeah, they're not police. They're not cops. You know? Like, and I think, you know, moving forward, you know, because now I work with, you know, police officers and different things as well. But, you know, that experience, you know, really opened up my eyes to how we view police officers, how we view white officers and how they treat us.
Right.
And then also how there are, you know, a lot of officers out there who are just a part of the community and you, like, you know what I mean? There is a way that we can build community to where we don't see them as part of the system. Because that's how I view these officers, these black officers who were football coaches, basketball coaches, and actively involved in the community. I mean, they could call my grandma, they could call my mom, they could call my dad,
right?
They knew my entire family, you know what I mean? And, and I view them as family as well, you know what I mean? And so moving forward, man, I think, you know, it's important for policing to look like that opposed to what it looks like now. And
That's deep you saying that. We did a segment with Officer Grover, as the officer of the peace, and that was so important to have that episode, a young black cop, and speak and talk exactly what you're speaking about.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely important, and it's possible. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think, again, another thing is, like, you know, the officers that I'm referring to, they live in a neighborhood.
They live in a neighborhood, D. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So if something goes down, they're like, hold on, what's going on my street? Because they're invested in their neighborhood.
Yeah.
Right? If something's going on in the school, it's like, yo, what's going on in the school? My children go here too.
My kids go here too.
Right? So it's a different type of investment in neighborhood versus, you know, these white suburban officers coming to the city to make their money and leave.
The experience that you had, the time from the whole situation, the trial, to the settlement, how long was that?
6 years.
6 years.
6 years and two trials, actually.
Two trials. The first trial was potential of you. They were going through with the procedure of arresting you. Yeah. Now, because that, as that, were you arrested? Did they legally arrest you because of the charges that they had?
Well, I was, you know, shackled in the hospital, but you know, once I got out of the hospital, I went straight home.
Like, you went straight home? No one ever came and said, no. You got to come down and put your prints in and serve the warrant or anything like that. There's this, we'll just see you at court.
Yeah.
We'll just see you at court. And, you know, from the outside looking and seeing what was happening and seeing how that was going on, this situation was, and it was happening in the midst of time where, let me, everybody, there was a lot of people getting shot by police officers, mere encounters turning into tragic situations, and they were dying. And here is someone who actually survived it. And because of you being alive and because of the activism that you were doing, it was making things that much, the most livable city in America, not so livable.
Exactly.
And it was literally causing, not that it was causing change, but it was causing disruption. And it was causing disruption at a very structural way. So much so that when it came time to the settlement piece, do you feel, and just honest, do you feel that you got justice?
Absolutely not.
Is that justice?
It's not, man. Financial compensation for physical, mental, emotional, spiritual
impairment.
That's not justice. You know what I mean? And
do you feel, I'm going to be honest, do you feel like taking or accepting the settlement is kind of going against what justice could have been? Be honest.
Justice couldn't have been.
So even if you didn't get the money, you still weren't going to get any justice?
No justice. Bro, and it's wild because I didn't understand this until, like, I was actually in civil trial. Mm-hmm. Because I thought that, you know, we was going to win. And they were going to be getting walked out in shackles. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And that was never the case.
So even before the civil, man, they're not even arrested.
They're not arrested. And there was no, like, the district attorney would have had to press charges, file charges against them.
Yeah.
And that was not going to happen in Pittsburgh. Zavallo's not going to do that.
That's a problem, man. He owes school vote pay, man. That's right? Not going down.
And so I never had a chance to receive justice. Never. For the whole 6 years, you know what I mean? I'm not going to say it was pointless because I've learned so much about myself spiritually. And it's all was purposeful for the work that I'm going to continue to do. And to me, that's justice. My justice lies in the work and the impact. The legacy.
If you did not accept the money, if you had took that stance that thanks but no thanks, we still got some issues such and such going on. No.
Because I wouldn't want the trial. So first of all, when I went to trial, out of over 100 people to select from, there were 0 black people, right, from my jury. So I would have, you know, did I want to?
Is that a jury of your peers?
Exactly. So do I want to risk that?
Wow.
Right? Or and be broke and broken, trying to have the impact that I'm having now, or do I, you know, look at it, you know, from a different perspective, right? To say, okay, cool. I could be broken, or I can have some resources
and be broken still,
and do the work.
That's deep that you say broke and broken. You know, I didn't even. I appreciate you saying that. Am I going to be broken, or I'm going to be at least have some resources? Be broken still, but at least have some resources.
Exactly.
Wow. I mean.